relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
If you thought 2016 was important, 2020 is going to be the greatest, most significant election of your lifetime. As a result, we've created a unique additional podcast with our regular guest in studio, former special assistant to President Trump, Boris Epstein. It's called The Battle for 1600. Join us today by subscribing to the podcast for free. Just look for my name, Boris Epstein, and The Battle for 1600.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take. But as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream today.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First. With Sebastian Gorka.
This is America First with me, Sebastian Gorka, and I'm very excited to introduce our guest host for today, Trish Regan.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to America First. I am Trish Regan, in for the wonderful Dr. Sebastian Gorka on this wonderful afternoon, and we've got some very interesting news coming out of Decision Desk HQ, as much as you can trust any of these things, right? Well, here's some good news for you, Trump supporters, that is. Looks like he's taking North Carolina, which would be 15 electoral votes. So North Carolina would bring him up to, what, 229? If he were to get Alaska, which it looks like that's possible, you'd be looking at 232. He's got Pennsylvania that he needs. We'll see what happens there. Georgia, they're talking about a recount in Georgia. If he could pick up Georgia, he'd be looking at 16. Possible recount happening in Wisconsin. You know, this is interesting. They have until November 17th to finish their canvassing. And then by 5 p.m. the next day, the Trump campaign would need to file for that recount. So you could see a recount in Wisconsin. You could see a recount in Georgia. In other words, this thing ain't over yet. This thing is going to keep on going. And I'll tell you, the problem with all of it right now is you're talking about razor thin margins. And when you have the media out there calling these things as they have, and knowing the bias that the media comes from, and we've seen it for four straight years. I mean, we've seen it for many years, right? But the fact that just over the last 4 years, the media really implicated him in everything, including going so far as to call him a Russian spy, saying that he and Russia stole the election. I mean, it was just one thing after another, really nauseating in so many ways. And so now, how is anybody supposed to trust the mainstream media when they're out there calling it as they are, despite the fact that you're talking about very, very thin margins? A lot of Americans don't trust it. Nearly 71 million people voted for President Trump. That's a lot of votes. And so for the left right now to be sort of acting as though this is, you know, some kind of blue wave, they're really losing it. I mean, Hillary Clinton, we know she's losing it, right? She's out there tweeting that this is a repudiation of Trump, a new page for America. And what does the mainstream media do? The mainstream media just piles on and piles on and piles on. Everyone, you're listening to Trish Regan. I'm in for Gorka today, Sebastian Gorka. And I definitely have had my experience with the mainstream media. So I'm very familiar with this, and I'm very familiar with the biases that do exist. So let me set the record straight here. You know, it's not a blue wave. It is not a repudiation of Trump's policies. Not when you're talking about nearly 71 million people. I mean, at present, we still have votes that are still being counted and still contested. I just talked to Sean Parnell, who's running in the 17th district there in Pennsylvania. He won't concede the election because he said, how can I? We're getting all kinds of reports of nefarious activity. And so he doesn't feel that it's appropriate for him to do so. He said, Trish, this is bigger than me. This is bigger than the Republican Party. This is bigger than Pennsylvania. This is really an American issue. We need to be able to trust our system and trust the votes. But again, the media wants you to think that somehow Donald Trump and 71 million Americans were utterly crushed. But that's not the case. There was no repudiation, Mrs. Clinton. No repudiation at all. In fact, Donald Trump received more votes than any sitting president in the history of this nation. Wow. So Hillary's wrong. The pollsters, they're wrong. They were wrong. The mainstream media is wrong. And Americans have had it with cancel culture. And yet cancel culture is out there in spades working overtime. I mean, like, people are coming out of the woodworks to join the whole Gestapo movement. It's the Gestapo. It really is. I mean, that's what you're seeing right now. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the likes of the CNN anchor, saying what he said on Twitter. You know, keep in mind, in his so-called victory speech, Joe Biden, I say victory, because he can't claim victory yet because so much of this is still being decided. But anyway, in that big speech he did over the weekend, he tried to sound very optimistic. He tried to talk about healing, right? You know, one big kumbaya session. And so he's out there talking about how we need to be united. In all fairness, I'm going to say this. It was actually a decent speech. Apparently, an MSNBC contributor may have helped him write it. We're now learning, of course. But it was not a bad speech. And look, you know, he didn't have a flub. He didn't have a major gaffe. So that in and of itself is something. But he's out there talking about all this unity while simultaneously you got the mainstream media, this Jake Tapper from CNN out there tweeting about how, oh, you know, people should really be thoughtful about what they're doing right now, because if you don't, it may affect your future employment. Think of how a future employer is going to think of you. I mean, once again, a total sort of shame fest. This is what they employ. It's an intimidation tactic. And you know what? People have had it. So I believe the American public just canceled cancel culture by coming out in spades in ways that nobody thought they could and nobody thought they would, right? This was supposed to be a very clear win yet again for the left. And in fact, it was anything but that. It really was. And considering how much the odds were stacked against this president, given the constant barrage from the media, it's pretty impressive that he and the Republicans did so well. But that's really just a testament to the people of this country who are saying, look, you know, we value our freedom. We value our rights as individuals. I mean, let me go back to this speech. This was a good line. I mean, it had a lot of good lines. He said, together on eagle's wings, this is Joe Biden on Saturday, we embark on the work that God and history have called upon us to do with full hearts and steady hands, with faith in America and in each other, with a love of country and a thirst for justice. Let us be the nation that we know we can be, a nation united, a nation strengthened, a nation healed, the United States of America. I love it. Courtesy of MSNBC's contributor, apparently. We'll see. We'll see about all this, because you know what? I'll believe it when I see it, right? I just don't buy this, because he may be spinning this narrative. But what's really happening behind the scenes when Hillary Clinton is basically saying, you know, a big middle finger to the 71 million people that voted for Trump, or the CNN anchors are trying to effectively intimidate people into thinking you can't admit that you ever voted for Trump, or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez gets out there you want to talk Gestapo, you know, saying that they need to compile a list of anybody who has ever said anything favorably on social media about the president. This is insane. I mean, these people really are off in some kind of insane world. And frankly, you want to talk fascism? This is a form of fascism. They are teetering on the edge of that right now. When you don't allow other voices to be heard, it's your way or the highway, then we have a real problem. They've got this group of never-Trumpers, a bunch of former Republican strategists that started the Trump Accountability Project. And, you know, I'll tell you, fascism makes for strange bedfellows, right? Because Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is out there tweeting this project alongside former members of Pete Buttigieg's campaign, alongside the never-Trumpers. I mean, we've got a wild environment right now. And again, what these people need to remember, is that half the country felt passionately enough about this president, you know, despite some of the things that he has said. It doesn't bother them because, you know what, they believe in themselves, they believe in America, and they believe in the power of the individual. This is the stuff that matters for the future of our economy, for the future of this nation. So don't sit there and tell me that somebody's not going to employ you because you dared to vote for Donald Trump. Don't sit there and tell me you're going to compile some kind of blacklist like we're living in a war-torn country. No, no, no. That has nothing to do with healing. And let's be clear. This ain't over yet. It's not over till it's over. And there's a lot more to go. We have terrific guests coming up for you today right here on America First. Trish Regan in for Sebastian Gorka. Don't go anywhere. Stephanie Hamill from OAN is next.
I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Let's get back to the show with Trish Regan.
It's so good to be here with all of you and in for my wonderful friend, Dr. Gorka, today. You know, we've been talking about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and how out of touch she is and, frankly, how out of touch so many members of the left and even the right, right? You think about these never-Trumper conservatives, and they've been working together with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others to try and create a kind of blacklist to prohibit anybody who's ever had any affiliation or good words to say with or about Donald Trump somehow from being able to move forward with their lives. AOC tweeting this out. And Stephanie Hamill, who is the host of In Focus on OAN every night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, a wonderful woman, a good friend of mine who I was always happy to have on my program, and I always enjoy going on hers. She's joining us right now with an in-depth look at this insanity coming out of AOC and others. Stephanie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Trish. It's an honor.
Oh, well, I'm honored to have you here. And I love how you're able to cut through all the, shall we say, BS, as you've always been able to do, and go straight to the root or the heart of this problem. And right now, you've got a rabid group of people that seem a little bit upset that 71 million people would dare to vote for Donald Trump. And so consequently, they're doubling down on this cancel culture. What's your take on the state of things right now?
Yeah, it's really incredible to see the media reaction to everything. You know, again, which I'm sure you touched on your show, is how the pollsters got it all wrong. They thought that there was going to be a blue landslide win for Biden, a blue victory, and it really hasn't played out that way. In fact, we're still counting votes. We don't really know what the results of the elections are, considering that the Trump team has their legal challenges. I think there are a lot of grounds for, you know, what they're accusing some of these states for and these election officials for when it comes to voter fraud. And also, just because the networks decided that Biden's going to be the next president of the United States doesn't mean that that's actually fact. Like, that is not the role of the networks. They can make projections, but they can't just come out and say that Biden's the next president. And it's just so astounding that the Biden team has already put together their transition team, and the networks are already acting like this is reality. So, yeah, we're seeing the Democrats squabble, especially the socialist left, because they're really uncomfortable what happened when it comes to the House and some of the seats that they lost. And AOC is just, you know, first of all, she feels very emboldened because she got 70% of the vote in her district, which is really mind-boggling to me, considering I can't think of one great accomplishment that she did in her years in Congress. And you even go out there and talk to the people of the streets in her communities, and her constituents can't even actually articulate one good thing that she's done for the community. We know she's scared off jobs. We know that she's a radical leftist, and the policies that she promotes in this country would destroy America and fundamentally change it into a country that we wouldn't recognize, one that we wouldn't want to live in, a third world country, if you will. So, yeah, AOC is talking about creating lists and talking about, you know, that Trump supporters really shouldn't be allowed into polite society. And she's also been talking about, well, it's not just her, actually, some of the other Democrats, like Jennifer Rubin, who claims, or she used to be a conservative, now she's a Democrat. She says that, you know, the GOP needs to be burned down. And she also,
and this is a woman
that,
who's an op-ed columnist for The Washington Post. And I was really struck and disgusted by some of the tweets that I saw from her. I mean, somebody who really, you know, should be triumphing and appreciating our freedom of speech, wanting to shut down others. It's a troubling time. And like I said, I really think we're creeping into this sort of fascist-like element. But nonetheless, you know, Americans are out there saying, hey, we've had it, because we may not tell the pollsters what we think, but we're sure doing something else when it comes to our actual votes. And that's why you saw that there was no blue wave. Let me get back to AOC, though, for a second with you. So AOC basically is trying to say, hey, you guys could have done even better if you had just listened to me, right? You guys don't understand the internet. You don't understand how to campaign. You know, apparently you just need to wear $14,000 worth of threads and grace the cover of Vanity Fair, and that's going to land you 70% of your district. I don't know, Stephanie, but what is her argument here, and how's that going to be received among Democrats?
Yeah, I was kind of scratching my head today. So she said that Democrats lost seats in the Senate and the House because of lack of online advertising, including on Facebook, basically internet incompetence. So I get that, yeah, there were some seats lost in the House, but I wouldn't blame it on the internet. It might be that they don't like the Democrats' platform and the policies that they're promoting, because not every district in this country is like the districts that the squad represent. Now, those people living in that district tend to be more leaning to the left, and apparently they seem to be satisfied with their members of Congress that they just sent back. But the reality is that's not the rest of America. I think AOC and these squad members need to get out of their bubble and realize how other Americans live. It's not the way that they envision and how they think Americans live. So, again, it's not because they didn't know how to use the internet. They're rejecting policies or ideas like defund the police. People witnessed their own cities and communities being burned down by the rabid, intolerant left, if you will, Antifa, Black Lives Matter. It's one thing for social justice people to go out there and protest. Again, protest is totally fine. But they were terrorizing communities, and we had the media lying to us about it, Democratic lawmakers either encouraging it, turning a blind eye, and also some of them even funding it, like Harris. She was caught backing one of these groups that helped pay for the release of criminals. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's totally astounding. So anyways, these are some of the policies that people don't like. People don't want more regulations.
People don't like it. I hear you. So then spinning this forward, I mean, I wonder if the Democrat Party, it sort of unravels, because you've got this rift, right, that's going on with the Alexandria Ocasio, extreme leftist of the world. And then you get the congresswoman from Virginia who's sitting there saying, wait a second, don't ever mention the word defund the police, the words defund the police again, because it nearly cost us many, many more seats. And so it's hard to kind of hang on to your position when you're talking about, frankly, anarchy.
Yeah, the Democratic Party has been divided for years, and we see the socialists of the party kind of just in the driver's seat right now. And some of these more so-called moderate Democrats look so weak. They just, for some reason, are taking orders from the radical left. And now, if you think about it, with Harris potentially as vice president, I mean, it's terrifying. Harris is one of the most radical socialists that we had in the Senate. And the idea that Biden's going to be in charge, no, he's not. Harris is going to be wearing the pants in this White House.
So did you do this trick the other night? On Siri, there was this thing going around the internet. And so I thought, okay, well, I'll give it a shot. And I couldn't believe it. So if you said to Siri, how old is the president? Sure enough, she spit back, Kamala Harris is 56 years and 19 days. I took a screen grab of it. I was so astounded. And then apparently, like, somebody clued into it, because 5 or 10 minutes later, she was spitting back the right answer. But I'm like, wait a second, does Siri know something that we don't? But maybe we all sort of do know it, right, Stephanie, that Kamala's wearing the pants in the family, as they say?
Yeah, I think we all know it. I think the Democrats know it, too. And it's not like Biden's ever taken a big stance on anything. I can't really think of any of his big accomplishments. I mean, he literally just goes where the wind blows. And even on the campaign trail, like, he didn't even know what he supported. Like, one day he supported fracking, the next day he didn't. So
all over the place. Well, catch her tonight, everybody, 6 p.m. Eastern on OAN In Focus with the wonderful Stephanie Hamill. I'll be watching.
FDNY firefighter Stephen Silver gave his life while saving others on 9/11. And the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been supporting America's frontline heroes ever since. When a first responder or military service member doesn't come home and young children are left behind, Tunnel to Towers pays off their mortgage to lift the financial burden and bring their family stability. For catastrophically injured veterans, Tunnel to Towers builds mortgage-free smart homes, enabling our most severely injured heroes to live more independent lives. I'm asking you to support this cause that's committed to honoring our nation's heroes and ensuring people never forget 9/11. Help Tunnel to Towers to do good. Donate $11 a month at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2, t.org. t2t.org. Thank you.
On the side of the U.S. Constitution, America First.
Hello, everyone. This is Trish Regan from TrishIntel.com, host of the brand new podcast, The Trish Regan Show. You can get it on Apple. You can get it on Spotify, anywhere you get your podcasts. Anyway, I'm so glad to be here in for my friend Seb today. And not that we can call any of these races, because I don't believe the media should be calling these races, but there is the HQ decision desk, which seems to be calling it right now for North Carolina, saying that North Carolina is projected to go for Donald Trump. So, you know, that could be another 15 electoral votes, bringing him to 229, possibly. You factor in Alaska, you could get to 232. Arizona, if he could flip it, would bring him 11. You've got Wisconsin, where it's quite possible we will see by November 18th that the RNC demands a recount there. There is a recount that's happening in Georgia. And, of course, Pennsylvania. Well, this will be interesting. We'll see what happens in Pennsylvania in the coming days. Again, lots of lawsuits being filed. And so there's accusations of fraud that are coming from some inside the Trump camp. Things that Kayleigh McEnany, who's the press person there for the White House, did get into in a press conference yesterday. But it seems not all members of the media were too enthused by this, including a guy who I kind of like. My friend Neil Cavuto over at Fox was just apparently so mad about what Kayleigh McEnany had to say that he said this to his viewers.
We want every legal vote to be counted, and we want every illegal vote to be...
I just think we have to be very clear. She's charging the other side is welcoming fraud and welcoming illegal voting. Unless she has more details to back that up, I can't in good countenance continue showing you this. I want to make sure that maybe they do have something to back that up. But that's an explosive charge to make, that the other side is effectively rigging and cheating. If she does bring proof of that, of course, we'll take you back.
You know, Tucker Carlson got into this in his program just last night, and it seemed to be a little bit of a veiled threat, if you would, at Neil, who's part of the news division, Tucker, who's more on the opinion side. And Tucker's point was, and I get this, right? He said effectively, like, hey, you know, it's really not your position to be like turning away from actual news. I mean, hey, don't you want to present both sides, right? I mean, isn't that the job of the reporter to make sure that, well, they've got Biden out there. He says he won. And then if the Trump camp is saying there's a problem here, can't that side be articulated as well? And shouldn't it be up to the viewer to try and make a decision? I think that's what is so troubling here for so many people, because they feel like if the tables were turned, right, if things were just a little different and you had Biden, you know, trying to claw his way to 270, then you might actually see many members of the mainstream media on his side. And they would be saying, okay, we've got to have these recounts. We've got to be very clear in this. But it just doesn't work that way when the tables are turned. I think what's most important here is that people trust the process and that they trust the media. And unfortunately, I feel like the trust in the process and the trust in the media has completely gone out the window, right? I'm a believer in you call it like it is and you let people know where you stand. Okay, so this whole journalism with a capital J thing, I'm sorry, but, you know, its time has sort of come and gone. If it ever had a time, frankly, because every single journalist that walks into the newsroom, they're not leaving their feelings by the door and their own biases by the door with their coat when they walk in. They have their own viewpoints, and anything that they say or do or write is going to be reflected, right? I mean, and you can try. I mean, I consider myself a very fair person and I try and give both sides all the due diligence I can. But I'm also very vocal about, well, here's where I stand, because I feel that you need to know that as a listener. Viewers need to know where you stand. And so this is in part, you know, hey, I'm not a Rachel Maddow fan. I don't like her style. I don't like her politics. But you know what? I respect the woman for at least telling us where she's coming from. And I respect Sean Hannity for telling us where he's coming from. In other words, in this day and age, let's cut the facade, right? Let's stop pretending we're something we're not. We're human beings. We have feelings and we have biases. And it's okay to put it out there. But that's all the more reason why news organizations should not be calling the elections. But you should wait until all the votes are properly accounted for. Until the electoral votes have been cast. That's the time when you can talk about who the next president of the United States is. And I have no doubt that once it's all said and done, if it folds in Donald Trump's favor, he will be magnanimous to Joe Biden, and vice versa. If it does not fold in his favor, if he has to concede, he will do so graciously. But let's let the process play out. There's nothing wrong with that. They do it for Joe. You know they would. Okay, we got a big show coming up. Trish Regan in for Seb today. TrishIntel.com. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Let's get back to the show with Trish Regan.
Oh, it's so great to be here in for Seb today. Hello, everyone. This is Trish Regan, TrishIntel.com. I'm so glad to be here on an important day. It looks like Trump may take North Carolina. Decision Desk HQ is projecting he will get North Carolina. That would be an additional 15 electoral votes. Now, there's been lots of questions about the transition. The Biden camp is getting really irritated because they claim that they are not getting the proper help in terms of security clearances, et cetera, for transition. But the Trump camp would say, well, wait a second. This isn't done and over yet. It's still going on. Here's Secretary Pompeo being asked about the issue here today at a press conference. Let's listen.
Is the State Department currently preparing to engage with the Biden transition team? And if not, at what point does a delay hamper a smooth transition or pose a risk to national security?
There will be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration.
I guess we know where his biases are. Anyway, I'm so happy to be joined right now by Katie McFarland. Katie McFarland was President Trump's first deputy national security advisor. She was part of that Trump transition team, you remember, in the early months of the Trump administration. She has worked in a number of administrations, held national security posts in the Nixon, Ford, and Reagan administrations as an aide to Dr. Henry Kissinger. I'm so glad to talk with you again. KT, welcome to America First.
Thrilled to be with you. And Mike Pompeo really does have a droll sense of humor, doesn't he?
So you don't think he meant anything by that? He was just sort of having some fun with the media?
No, but I think that it was at two levels. So one, he was having some fun with the media. But the second level was, hey, wait a minute, we do not have a certified president-elect yet. The states are the only people who can certify a president-elect and the electors of the states, and they haven't done that yet. The media has called it, and Biden has claimed it, but the states have not all weighed in. And
so how is this different, though? I mean, let's talk about, because, you know, the media calls it like every 4 years, right? And usually, though, you're in a situation where the other team admits defeat, the other side concedes, and I always think it's kind of a beautiful thing, right? You know, because it proves our democracy and how healthy and wonderful it is. But this time around, you get some problems, and you get some questions about the authenticity of the voting. You get some questions about the authenticity of the counting, and so there's legal challenges ahead. Consequently, lawsuits being filed, et cetera, et cetera. So you don't have the other side calling up and saying, "Hey, it's over." And yet the media says it's over?
Well, we do have precedent for the fact that it's not over on election night, and that's in the year 2000 that nobody's proud of. But Florida was unable to certify its election results, and it took them a month before they were able to do so. The problem this time, and the reason I think it's so complicated this time, is, yes, it's close. It's historically close, mm-hmm. Probably one of the closest elections we've ever had in American history. But the real complication is COVID, and the difference is a number of states have, at the very last minute, changed the way they count the votes and how they tally the votes and when people and how people can vote. For example, Florida in 2000, that was the state that couldn't certify who really had won in certain counties, and it came down to, you know, 5,000-10,000 votes in certain counties. Florida since then, in 20 years, has really cleaned up their act. And they have three ways to vote. One way is you vote by mail in advance. The other way is that you vote in person in advance, a 2 week in advance. And then the third way is you vote on election day itself. And there are lots of safeguards in the Florida system. But people, I think it's worth recalling to everybody, we don't have one election on election day, we have 50. Each state gets to decide who votes, how they vote, when they vote, how the votes are tallied. Florida, for example, will count them as they come in. So let's say, Trish, you sent in your mail-in ballot a month before the election. Your mail-in ballot was counted. Other states said, no, we're not going to start counting until election night. So all of a sudden you may have had, you have 10 million votes to get through on election night. And because there's so many of them which were sent mail-in, votes, and there just have been a lot of mistakes with them. So I think it's very legitimate that there are questions. I'm happy that the Trump administration is pursuing any legal measures. I'm unhappy with both sides screaming at each other. But let's just let the process play out. We have a constitution.
No, there's a process here. I hear you. And you know what? We should be proud of that process, and we should welcome that process. But a lot of people, they don't want to welcome it because they despise this president so much that they're willing to look the other way when it comes to, you know, making sure that we have the sanctity of our votes intact. Let's talk about this pathway a little bit, and just humor me, because, again, nothing's been called. We want to emphasize that. But it's projected now that he's going to take North Carolina. This is from Decision Desk HQ, which would be an additional 15 electoral votes to the 214 he's projected to already have, bringing him, KT, to 229. You factor in Alaska, which he should get 232. Now, you're coming down to Arizona, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Wisconsin. He would have to flip Arizona. He would have to flip Wisconsin. They're talking about maybe having a recount there. They have until November 18th. Pennsylvania, all kinds of problems there in Pennsylvania, which has been well documented, and they're suing over that. And you're looking at a recount in Georgia for 16 electoral votes. There is a path to winning. I guess my question is, does it happen in your view?
Maybe, maybe not. And I'm not, you know, and I would be no more than guessing at this point.
Right.
Just like everybody else is guessing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think it's so important to let the process play out. There are people investigating the validity of the ballots. How many ballots? Were there computer glitches? Let the forensic experts check this out. Let the lawyers.
And some people are saying, oh, he doesn't really have a path. You know, it's really hard. He's got to get all four states. And I'm like, yeah, but if you have issues in each of these states, don't you, I mean, just for the sake of the country, don't you want to resolve it all?
Yeah, and you want to resolve it for the world.
Right, right. Now, very, very good point. Very quickly, because I just have 60 seconds left. What's your sense of what happens with China under a Joe Biden administration?
Does he do what he's saying he's going to do or what he's done in the past? If past is prologue to the future, it's a disaster. We'll kowtow to China at every single step.
That's a really scary thought because I feel like we're going to all wake up one day and need to learn to speak Mandarin, which, by the way, is not an easy language. KT McFarland, author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. Follow her on Twitter at RealKTMcFarland. She's the best, brilliant, brilliant woman. Anything you need to know about international policy, KT knows it. KT, thanks so much for joining today. Appreciate your time.
America First. Magnificent.
Welcome back, everyone. I am Trish Regan. I am in for Seb today. TrishIntel.com, host of the new podcast, The Trish Regan Show. We're looking at a market right now that is about to close in mixed territory. Dow Jones Industrial Average ending the day up about 0.9%, 29,427. Looks like it may be the closing level, with the S&P off a little more than 0.1%. But you know who's really taking it on the chin today is the NASDAQ, down 1.44%. There seems to be this rotation happening out of technology into, you know, more the sort of stable names within the Dow, but interesting to see, right? Because it was sort of be all end all tech for a while as we were transitioning as an economy. We'll see how this all plays out. I think the big concern right now is whether or not we're going to have another shutdown. There are people that are fearful we could see another shutdown under Joe Biden. Of course, he's talking about a mask mandate. You know, that's all, you know, fine and well, I guess, so long as it doesn't actually become a law. Because there's this little thing called the Constitution, you know, which would kind of get in the way of that. Anyway, Joe Biden is talking about a mask mandate, which has, you know, a lot of people's imaginations taking off, saying, wait a second, if he were president, might we actually be looking at a national shutdown? Another one of these things on the horizon, which would take a chunk out of the economy. I mean, we really, really got hit in the second quarter. And it was all sort of self-inflicted. We've bounced back, right? Nice. 33.1% growth. In the third quarter, I will take it on an annualized basis, 7.4% over the previous quarter. And the thought is we can continue, right? If Joe Biden, if he actually walks into the Oval Office, he's going to need to stay the heck out of the way, right? Because Americans know what to do economically. We know how to take care of ourselves. It's when government gets in the way of that, that it becomes problematic. If they were to trust the individual, to believe in the individual, to take care of oneself, maybe we wouldn't have been down as bad as we were down in the second quarter. But I'll tell you, 33.1% annualized growth, it's historic. We have never had that kind of growth. And guess what? 6.9% unemployment. You know, it took Barack Obama and Joe Biden basically 5 years to get the American economy at 6.9% unemployment. And what? It took the president 5 months, and America 5 months. I know they'll tell you different situation, this, that, and the other. This was a, you know, in 2008, a real systemic crisis, but we were dealing with a pandemic. I mean, no president has had to deal with a pandemic before, and now we're back at some pretty healthy decent levels. So we need that to continue. Again, as the market closes out the day, you're looking at a mixed bag with the NASDAQ getting more hurt. NASDAQ Composite Index trading down about 1.5% as it closes out the day, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average up almost 1%. And the S&P trading, we'll see how it settles out, down about 6 points or so. Anyway, I'll be back with a whole lot more. Trish Regan from TrishIntel.com with you here in for Seb.